Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't shut, you see? I know the story, just listen to shut, me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And good morning, everyone. I don't know where you are, but where I happen to be, it's a snow day. And I just love being able to broadcast, spouting off anywhere, everywhere, no matter where you are. So we are looking at our show number 88. It is October 29th, 2019. If you're listening to this somewhere else and sometime else, that's when we're taping it. Some people don't like to do that, but I like to do that so you know what we're looking at in the news. And of course, if you'd like to hear the archives of the other 87 shows, they're all on my website. You know, you can binge listen. You can just listen one right after the other, you know, taking time out for meals, of course. But, you know, it gives you kind of a great little panoramic view of what it is we're looking at and dealing with. And if only we could tell the future and see what comes, but I'm not sure we would appreciate it. I don't know if we would really like that or not. Anyway, this is your host, your humble and sometimes harried host, Karen Cataline. If you'd like more on archives, that's it. That's the word I wanted. I don't know. The snow makes you kind of a little giddy, doesn't it? If you'd like archives or op-eds or blog posts or any one of a number of things, how to get a hold of me, how to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, you name it, go to my website, www.karencataline.com. If you know how to spell my name, and you probably do because you're listening now, Karen spelled the normal way, Cataline spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. If you want to pronounce it right, it rhymes with spleen, but I answer to almost anything. So much going on today. We have a spiffy guest, which I'll be telling you more about her. In fact, let me just tell you real quick who we have as our guest after my monologue. Her name is Evelyn Marcus, and she has made a film called Never Again Is Now. And it's a film about not only her experience and her parents' experiences with the Holocaust and anti-Semitism, but also what's going on today. I have a couple of challenging questions to ask her. You wouldn't think so, but I do. And also what she sees coming down the pike in terms not only of Jew hatred, but of course, America hatred. And they are, at this point in time, incredibly linked in fundamental ways. So the big news this week certainly has been the killing of Baghdadi, the head of ISIS. Now, in light of all of this, the Democrats, who cannot give Donald Trump an ounce of credit for anything. I mean anything. It doesn't matter. People have said this. If he cured cancer, it wouldn't matter. They would have something critical to say about it. Why is that? Why can't they even allow the slightest good thing to say about Donald Trump, particularly when there's so incredibly many good things to say about Donald Trump? He's not part of the swamp. He hasn't taken a salary. He is not a racist or a bigot. He cares about Americans and America, no matter what color they are. And he's proven it again and again. We say it because the media and the left won't. The lowest black unemployment, the lowest Hispanic unemployment in history. Did Obama, Mr. Half-Black, first half-black president of the United States, did he do that? No, of course not, because he was committed to making the mascots of the Democrat Party, that is, people who belong to a certain identity group, to make them dependent on government and therefore a reliable vote to keep Democrats in power. We say this, but you know what? We cannot say it enough, because that's what's really going on. And we see evidence and we see facts and we see them continue to bear this out every day. So another reason the Democrats cannot possibly give credit where credit is due. This was a massive undertaking. Wisely, Donald Trump did not tell the Democrat, socialist, communist, America-hating left, because he knew that they would leak. That's all they do is leak. They leak like sieves, like Adam Schiff leaks like a sieve. They have proven again and again that they don't care about the welfare of the military or the welfare of American citizens who are sitting ducks for illegal alien MS-13 criminals and other criminals who come across the border unvetted. They don't seem to care about that because it doesn't fit with their narrative. Now, I know I'm not saying anything all that new, but I don't know what needs to be said. So I'm saying it. So another reason why the Democrats cannot afford to give Donald Trump credit for breathing is because they've gone so off the wall. These so compassionate, caring people who dictate to the rest of us about tolerance. And yet they have made this man, you know, we all have flaws. Frankly, the more I see Donald Trump in action, the more phenomenal respect I get for him. And I never disliked him. I just wasn't sure, you know, that he would be the right guy for the right times. I am 100% convinced he's the right guy for the right times. And frankly, his flaws, whatever they are, pale. Well, I don't know them all, and I don't know everyone's flaws, but his flaws pale in comparison to the deceptive, lying, corrupt swamp that has become our government in Washington, D.C. And that includes Mitt Romney, Mr. Oh, he's such a nice guy. So when they make Donald Trump out to be this evil, God forbid, Hitler, racist, bigot, this can't stand. They're jumping up and down. They've been jumping up and down. Every single criticism, charge, indictment of this president has proven to be lies. How many times do you believe liars until you start realizing they're liars? I have talked to even not such conservative, but certainly not leftist talk show hosts who continue to give credibility and credence to this pack of lying thieves. It blows my mind that there are talk show hosts who are considered to be bright. Their names shall remain nameless, kind of like that wonderful dog. It's classified still. Who look at every issue in a microscope. And now people are looking at this impeachment and saying, oh, well, we have to look at it on its merits. Well, there's nothing meritorious in this impeachment whatsoever. You're talking about a pack of dogs, and not such nice dogs, not such noble dogs as the Belgian Malinois, who shall remain nameless because his name is still classified, who helped to bring Baghdadi to justice. I don't know if it was exactly justice. He took three kids with him when he blew himself up. But nonetheless, the left is busy trying to criticize and demean Trump in the face of this massive success and accomplishment. Presidents of both sides, Democrats and Republicans, have been trying to get this guy who's responsible for mass rape, mass beheadings. He's a terrorist. He's head of the most ruthless terrorist group imaginable, which evidence is now coming out. We don't know all the facts, but evidence is now coming out that Obama actually asked some of our government agencies to train ISIS. Do I have that article in front of me? No, I do not. But I've said for a long time, all roads lead to Obama, at least in these times when we're talking about instituting socialist ideas. Oh, you didn't build that. So he was trying to be palatable to the American people. He wanted to be the good guy who was feeding us pablum of socialism. And, oh, the Muslims helped to found this country. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Our founders warned us about Islam and its totalitarian, authoritarian ideology. Does that mean every Muslim is a totalitarian or authoritarian? No, not necessarily. But the more religious they get, the more they are invited into that kind of unreformed, meaning without reformation, ideology. So here we have a left that has gone off the deep end. Remember, for 2 years we kept saying they're going off the deep end? No, they've gone off the deep end. They're lying about impeachment. They're putting on a dog and pony show that makes uninformed citizens think that there is an impeachment. There is no impeachment. They're putting on a lie. It is a faux impeachment hearing behind closed doors, and they're getting caught in lie after lie after lie. Their audience, who's their audience? Their audience are people who, if they read a headline, that's more informed than many of the Americans who think that impeachment is actually happening today. No, what they want is for the public, the dutiful media, to keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it to make people think that Donald Trump is under assault. He's under assault by a treasonous Democrat Party that has not cared about the rule of law. Now, there are also other talk show hosts that talk endlessly about how we are not allowed to use the word treason. Well, if this isn't treason to railroad a president out of office that is duly elected and hasn't done anything impeachable, let alone done anything wrong, and yet the accusers, including the corrupt heads of the CIA and the FBI, have been engaged in trying to topple an American president who actually, along with, even if he wasn't this great, that would be treason. The fact that he is as successful a president and is actually accomplishing things that politicians on both sides of the aisle have been promising, and refused to do because, guess what? The dirty little secret is they never wanted to do it. That's one of the reasons my theory is that they hated Donald Trump from the beginning, because they knew that he stood to expose them and their corruption and their bribery and blackmail of, either taking a bribe or taking a blackmail, whatever. I don't know. Okay. I do not know. Here's what I surmise, though. They've been doing dirty, or as Tom Morris on my favorite show, Live PD, says, they've been riding dirty. They've been riding dirty. And they knew that Donald Trump couldn't be bought, and he was set to expose them riding dirty. And since the reason they were riding dirty is so they could maintain and keep and hold power, and they didn't want all their dirty deeds to be exposed to the American public, that's the reason they've been trying everything, even illegal activity, even framing a president. Do you know how many Democrats do not know that Donald Trump's accusation that Obama, and he named him by name, that Obama was spying on him? I think he called it wiretapping, and the Democrats went bonkers. Oh, isn't he an ignoramus? Oh, we don't wiretap anymore. No, he was tapping their phone. He was using the power of the United States government, that's called obstruction of justice, and I'm not even an attorney, to spy on his political opponents and what turned out to be his successor, because he wanted to make sure that Hillary, who he hated, by the way, but who could be bought, that she would succeed him in the presidency. That's who was supposed to succeed him in the presidency. Oh, and by the way, a very unsuccessful president. Obama was unsuccessful. The only thing he was successful at is ushering in socialism, which is not what America stands for. Oh, my goodness. So much to talk about. So that's my story today, is not only killing of Baghdadi, but how this impeachment figures in. As a matter of fact, this is interesting. I pulled this in all my show prep, and here's the headline. Susan Rice complains that Trump should have informed Obama about killing the ISIS leader. I mean, this was just, this was just priceless, right? Susan Rice, former ambassador to the UN. At the time. I want to make sure that's accurate. He's an advisor. She was an advisor to Obama and was caught lying, flat out lying about Benghazi. So I'm going to just read you this. Usually I don't read articles very much or just a couple of sentences, but I got to read this to you. She called Lindsey Graham, who I have a love-hate relationship with, a piece of S. Now, this is internet radio. I could say it if I wanted to. I just don't feel like it because we maintain terrestrial radio standards here on Spouting Off. But so she called on a kind of an obscure episode of another radio program, Pod Save the World. That's great. So she called Lindsey Graham a piece of S. Graham responded to Rice last week on Fox News saying this. Everything she touched turned to a piece of crap. He said that on Fox News. National security wise, it does bother me that the person who lied about Benghazi is still relevant. Here's her greatest hits. The Iran nuclear deal, withdrawal from Iraq, the rise of ISIS. At the end of the day, the Rwanda genocide, the Syrian red line. The bottom line is, I hope the American people will remember that it's Susan Rice and Barack Obama who brought you ISIS, who gave the Ayatollah $150 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars. And at the end of the day, if she doesn't like me, I must be doing something right. Now, that's the Lindsey Graham that I have come to love. He's a little more of a hawk when it comes to some parts of Middle Eastern policy, but there's no making any mistake as to what he thinks about Susan Rice. All right, so that's it for the monologue this time around. When we come back from our break, I will be honored and pleased to have as my guest Evelyn Marcus, who will tell us about her new movie that just came out called Never Again Is Now. It just was released. You can probably get it on the internet. And we will be talking about that and anti-Semitism in America and around the world when we come back. Karen Cataline and I am pleased to be your host and producer of Spouting Off. We'll be right back.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
This is Karen Cataline, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karencataline.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N, and Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karencataline.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.karencataline.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off. This is Karen Cataline. Are you unsure if your current Medicare plan is still the best one for you? The annual enrollment period is right around the corner. This is the best time of year to review your plan and learn what's new. Anita McAllister is a licensed agent who will guide you through the confusing Medicare maze. Since 2011, she has helped many individuals and couples obtain Medicare peace of mind. Call her today at 970-515-6882 to set up a no-obligation, no-cost appointment. That's 970-515-6882 for Anita McAllister. We're back. Karen Cataline with you on Spouting Off here on BBS Radio Station 1. I am really delighted and honored to have with us Evelyn Marcus. Hi, Evelyn. Let me tell everyone about you.
Hi. Are you there? Thank you for having me on your show.
My pleasure. Evelyn holds a PhD in psychology from Erasmus University in Rotterdam. She was a member of an advisory task force to Dutch Parliament on policies against cultural violence. She also co-founded the Dutch nonprofit organization Network on Anti-Semitism, a pressure group and think tank, can't wait to hear about that, that urged and advised authorities to take measures against rising anti-Semitism. She also writes a lot of articles published in leading Dutch newspapers and American online sites, Gatestone Institute, Front Page, which I love and have been published there, and also speaking throughout the United States. Welcome to Spouting Off, Evelyn Marcus.
Thank you. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
My pleasure. Now, the one thing I didn't mention is one of the reasons you're doing a lot of interviews around, and that is for your new film, Never Again Is Now. And people should go to www.neveragainisnowfilm.com. Tell us about this film, why you decided to make it, and how it's so personal to you.
This film actually happened to me. I met a documentary team that wanted to make a film, a documentary about the rising anti-Semitism in Europe. I am from Holland. And when they heard my personal story, they wanted to make a film about anti-Semitism rising in Europe using my personal story. Mm-hmm. So that's how it started. I was born and raised after World War II in Holland. I'm Jewish. My parents had lived through the Holocaust and thank God were liberated by the Americans and the Canadians. Mm-hmm. I was born after World War II and grew up you know, virtually without any anti-Semitism, as you can imagine, in Holland. But that drastically changed in 2000. Then anti-Semitism started to rise all over Western Europe, also in Amsterdam, where I live. And so I became active against that. And I mean, as a child of Holocaust survivors, I couldn't look away from it. So I became an activist against the rising anti-Semitism, started a pressure group and think tank. And so, but then in 2006, my partner Rosa and I got the opportunity to move to the U.S. And we grabbed it, and thank goodness we did, because today we see many Jews in Europe considering to leave or have already left.
So to what do you attribute this huge change in 2000 in Holland?
So what happened, what I've seen happening in my lifetime was that Holland, when I was young, Holland started out as being very pro-Israel. That changed at the hard left when I was a student in university. The environment in university started to flip from pro-Israel to very anti-Israel. And that often became hateful. But it was just restricted to that far-left environment of university. But that trickled more into the mainstream over the decades. And then in the 90s, we had a big rise in Muslim immigration into the...
I was waiting for you to say that. I have to say that. Yep, in Germany, in France, in Britain, huge, massive immigration, I just had to say, given by the apostate Jew, George Soros, who spent tons of money trying to change populations in Europe and importing a new Holocaust in Europe. Is that overstated, do you think?
Well, I don't know if it's how much it has to do with George Soros, but the fact is that Europe started, was booming, the economy was booming in the 60s. It imported labor from northern Africa, from Morocco, Turkey. And those workers who came to Europe stayed and brought in their families, usually large families. On average, every immigrant from that region brought in 25 family members. And this is three generations ago. These people also took with them, in many cases, the huge amount of anti-Semitism of their country of origin. So that's why when in 2000 there was the second Intifada in Israel, and that triggered a lot of violence of the Muslim population in Europe. Not all of them, but a lot of them, against Jews, you know, who were just on their way to synagogue on Saturday morning and would get rocks thrown to their heads. I had a pink Star of David on the front door of our apartment, of the apartment of my partner Rosa and I. So we saw a lot of violence. I heard yells in the street in Amsterdam, Hamas, Hamas, Jews to the gas, demonstrations where ISIS flags were waved and calls to kill all the Jews were screamed. I can go on and on. And also the less violent anti-Semitism coming from the left, it had become mainstream, so I would be held personally responsible for the policies of Israel by my colleagues, by my friends, and often in a very hostile way.
Evelyn, were you a, for the lack of a better term, a liberal, a leftist, a Democrat? I mean, in the American sense, were you liberal before?
Yes.
Yes, because it's a very liberal area, Amsterdam. They've been on the forefront of a lot of liberal policies. Let me just stop there and drill down a little bit, because on this program I talk often about the contradictory ideology of the left and how they began by screaming up and down about compassion and tolerance and compassion and justice, and yet that has made way for a very authoritarian, highly judgmental, incredibly bigoted view of their political enemies. All they have to do is call someone a racist, and bingo, you get to be as hateful and horrible to them as you wish. So it's an incentive to call the people that you don't like, that you want to justify your hatred, even violence towards, call them bigoted, call them unjust, and bingo, you get to do everything you claim other people are doing. Where am I wrong? Yeah. Am I wrong?
No, I agree with you. I'm very disappointed with the hypocrisy.
Yes.
Of human rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't. It, if we see how it works out, for instance, against Israel or Jews who have no place in human rights advocacy, then I think what I see there is also the women's, the feminism of Muslim women like Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who
she's wonderful. I love her.
Right. So, who speaks out about women's rights in Islam and risks her life.
Yeah.
With it.
What about gay rights in Islam? What about
gay
rights to religious pluralism in Islam?
Everybody who stands up for them, even coming from those cultural backgrounds, they are ignored by the feminist movement. And there are other human rights that these people stand up for, and they are ignored. So I'm very disappointed with the hypocrisy of human rights movement, and it became politicized, and anything that doesn't fit their multicultural politicized narrative is ignored or punished.
Evelyn, I might go you one better, and you may or may not agree. And then we're going to have to take a break, and I'm fascinated and delighted that you've agreed to join us. I'd go you one better and say that the precursor to all of this hatred and bigotry coming from the left that was couched in compassion, and we're just more compassionate than anyone else, was a ruse, was a lie from the beginning. It isn't really hypocrisy when the people putting this stuff out, and I don't mean everybody like the hangers-on who'd like to think of themselves as compassionate. What I mean are the people that are really the true leftist strategists, which we have way too many of them here in America, as you are now American. Bravo, Baruch Hashem. And honestly, it is a ruse. It's the same ruse as the 70s feminism, which, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. And then all of a sudden, women are shoved into a gilded cage and they're now victims all over again because the ideology has changed. That's not really hypocrisy as much as it is they were lying from the start. I'll let you comment on that if you care to, and we're going to talk more about your movie, talk more about where people can watch it after this wonderful guest, Evelyn Marcus, here on Spouting Off. Stay with us.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Are you confused about Medicare and your options? Are you turning 65? Would you like some clarity about your options? My name is Anita McAllister. I'm a licensed agent who specializes in Medicare. Call me at 970-515-6882 to set up a no-obligation, no-cost appointment to learn about what's right for you.
Wonderful guest, Evelyn Marcus, PhD in psychology. That's another thing we have in common. Not only are you Jewish, Evelyn, as I am, I like to say I put the Judeo in Judeo-Christian, but I have an MSW. You have a PhD in psychology. I don't know what it is. Jews are attracted to those kinds of professions. Maybe it's so we can figure ourselves out. I don't know. But thank you, Evelyn, for staying with us. So are you the producer of this film, Never Again Is Now?
The original executive producer is Glenn Beck.
Wonderful.
Yes, and his documentary team worked with me, and then two years ago, I became the owner and updated the film and prepared it for distribution. And since last Wednesday, it's available on Amazon Prime Video.
And for my listeners, whether you're listening to this live right now or whether you hear it a month from now, you can get it by going to www.neveragainisnowfilm.com, and you will see Evelyn Marcus's lovely face and read a little more about her biography. It's quite fascinating. Give us, before we go back to some of these issues, and it's a massive topic, to be able to take this on in a short amount of time is, ambitious. Tell us a little more about your family and the personal aspect of this film. What was it like growing up with Holocaust survivor parents? Was it different, do you think, than some other parents? What was your experience, and how is that covered in the movie?
The first part of the movie is about the story of my parents during the Holocaust and the miraculous liberation of my mother and her family by the 9th American Army when they were in a train sent from Bergen-Belsen to further east to be gassed. And on their way there, they were the train was stopped by the Americans. How that affected my life is that for as long as I lived, as my parents were alive, we would thank the Americans on the date of that liberation, April 13. The film team found a 97-year-old veteran of the 9th American Army who had opened the train where my mother was in with her family and liberated her. So they flew me out to meet her and to meet him, sorry, and that was one of the most emotional moments of my life. To say thank you to him was special. And so you'll see that in the film.
And you never would have been born. You never would have been born.
Exactly.
Again, Baruch Hashem. So glad.
Baruch Hashem. Absolutely.
Baruch Hashem.
So then, and then my parents taught me an important lesson after World War II. And that was, we should have taken the signals and the signs of Hitler more serious at the beginning. But we thought, he's just saying this, he will never do this. And then, you know, by the time we took him serious, it was too late. We couldn't escape anymore, and we couldn't fight him anymore. As you may know, Holland was occupied within 3 days by the Nazis. So the lesson they taught me is take those signs serious sooner when these developments are not that strong yet. You can still stand up to it and stop it. And that's exactly the message of my film. And that's also what explains the title, Never Again Is Now. I see the beginning signs of what I saw in Europe happening, what we just discussed before the break. I see that now in America.
Mm.
So we have to stop this now before it becomes too strong.
What is your recommendation to do so? What can we do? What do you think we should be doing that we're not doing?
Okay. We should much better look into how white supremacists work with the internet. That's one thing we don't understand enough yet of the mind of the white supremacist today. We also should understand that if we allow uncontrolled immigration in the West, populism will rise, and in its fringe will come white supremacy.
Let me ask you a question, Evelyn.
Yes.
Jew hatred, you know, you could take a spiritual view of it, which I sometimes do, or you could take a rather secular view. Jew hatred is thousands and thousands of years old. And yes. The kind of anti-Semitism that you're talking about, I very frankly see much more true evidence of it in terms of leftist ideology, unfettered immigration. I'm seeing way more true evidence of it than I'm seeing, quote, white supremacy. I think, well, maybe it is or maybe it isn't worthwhile to have that discussion or that disagreement. We were talking at the break about how the Charlottesville situation has been, in my opinion, changed from the reality. I would encourage you, I know you haven't studied it up much, but Dinesh D'Souza really outed the people that started that and claiming to be white supremacists as agents provocateur from the left. They need, in order to fit their narrative that white people are the problem, they need to smear white people as white supremacists. I just don't see it in America. What I do see is a virulent hatred of Israel on the left, a virulent self-hating Jews, Democrats, socialists on the left. Socialism has always hated Jews. Now, I'm not saying that anybody has a monopoly on Jew hatred, but I would encourage you, you know, to look into this more, because it's all part of a leftist Jew hating narrative that currently is much more virulent on the left. And when they lie about it, it makes people think that, oh, it's all morally equivalent. I don't think that it is. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you that white supremacist anti-Semitism is lower in numbers than it is on the left, although not necessarily in severity, because we've seen the attack in Pittsburgh on the synagogue in Pittsburgh a year ago. We've seen
and make no mistake, I don't mean to say that it doesn't exist at all. I would be a fool to say that. So let me just qualify that. Forgive me. Go ahead.
I also agree with you that fanatic Alinskyite organizers are capable of all kinds of tricks. So who knows?
Yes.
It's an interesting hypothesis by Dinesh D'Souza. But Just from my intuition, living in Europe also, by the time I lived in Europe, I saw the old-fashioned European Jew hatred come a bit more, being triggered a bit by, you know, the whole understandable defensiveness against massive immigration. So yeah. I was always afraid that Jews would be put in the same category as immigrants, and in many cases that is what happened. Agree with you that it's much bigger, maybe not that violent, but it's much bigger at the left, and certainly also in the Muslim population. The American Muslim population is the least radicalized in the world, but radical imams are working hard to radicalize them. We've seen
That's true.
in the past few years, we've seen in several mosques in the United States imams calling for the annihilation of the Jews during prayer service. So we have to be very careful of that as well.
Yeah, and there's so many directions I could go with the last couple of minutes of our interview. We only have maybe, about 5 more minutes, and I want to focus on what we think we can do about it. I did want to mention, however, that with all the bending over backwards that Germany has done to make it so no one can deny the Holocaust in Germany, what do? They get Mother Merkel, who imports the Holocaust with Jew-hating Muslims. And I said it at the time, this was a disaster. Unfettered immigration of Syrians who are bathed in Jew hatred. They are taught it from infancy. And it's unconscionable and outrageous, regardless of who funded it, I think. So that's the point. So your dear parents, whom I'm assuming probably aren't with us anymore, as mine aren't, your dear parents warned you about the signs of anti-Semitism and Jew hatred. And here we're seeing it in huge signs in Europe, and we're seeing it in America. So if you could prescribe and get people to listen, and your film is part of that, what do you think we need to, what can we do, what should we be doing to make sure that there is not, God forbid, another Holocaust, not only of Jews, but of Christians, of people who are deemed unacceptable in some way or other?
We have to educate ourselves about elements in the religious ideology within Islam that is virulently anti-Semitic, and educate ourselves about how many believers take that seriously. Also in our Western Hemisphere. And we have to, instead, if we want an interfaith dialogue with Muslims, like we do in so many Reform synagogues and conservative synagogues, we all the time, our dialogue partners today are the most Orthodox and even Islamist organizations. So, as Reform Jews, we don't even talk to Orthodox rabbis. Why do we dialogue with Orthodox
Muslims? I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. I just want to throw this in, if I may. The Reform movement that reveres liberalism more than it reveres Judaism sees Muslims as victims. They can't see the bigotry and the hatred.
So what would be logical, much better to do, is dialogue with Muslim reformers. There is a Muslim reform movement in America.
Touché.
And meet with them, dialogue with them, give them a platform. These people go into they want to modernize their own religion, and they have to enter their mosques with security. They're threatened by their own community. So give them a platform, support them, dialogue with them. And I don't think Reform rabbis even know of the existence of a Muslim reform movement.
But well, they and they would actually, their reaction, since liberalism is so much a part of their, bathed in liberalism, they would say it's somehow insulting to Islam, yeah, not to go to the Orthodox, but yet many of them loathe the Orthodox Jews. What a superb point that is. That is a superb point. I love that. I'm going to maybe even and really, really think about that. In our last few minutes, we have about 3-4 minutes left. I'm going to just give you the floor because I've interrupted you, and I apologize. So many important issues that I'm passionate about. Go for it. What do you think we need to know? And what else do you want to say?
Yes, another thing we need to educate ourselves and each other and our families and friends about, if we have the opportunity to do so, is to understand the clear line between legitimate criticism of Israel and where it crosses the line of becoming anti-Semitic. There are very clear criteria for that, and I'll mention them to you quickly.
Please.
They're called the three D's, to make it easier to memorize. The first D is demonization. If you criticize Israel, but you do so by demonizing Israel, and especially demonizing Israel as with the classical anti-Semitic tropes of bloodsuckers, child killers, the blood libel, or you compare Israel to the Nazis and say, you know, they behave in the same way, that's anti-Semitic. That's demonization. The second D is double standard. If you hate Israel or want to isolate it economically or politically or financially, if you want to do that because of Israel's quote-unquote transgressions of human rights, why don't you demand the same punishment of other countries that do much worse things than Israel does? So singling out Israel, like the UN does, by constantly adopting resolutions against Israel because of its human rights transgressions, and not punishing Saudi Arabia or Iran, for instance, is that's a double standard, and it's anti-Semitic because it singles out the Jewish state.
Mm-hmm.
The third D is delegitimization, denying the right of the Jewish state to exist as a Jewish state is anti-Semitic, and this definition, these three D's, are now adopted by many international platforms, like the EU, like the State Department of the United States, and even the UN itself, but it doesn't enforce it within its own body, unfortunately. But that's a clear line, and we should try to hold each other to it, especially Jews who are leaning left and who have primarily left environment. They're constantly showered with criticism of Israel, and they must recognize what I just said. And it would be great if they would stand up to that crossing of the line by using the criteria of those three Ds.
Superb.
And we also should educate ourselves much better about Islam and what the good things are in Islam and what the things are that are going against
Unfortunately, we have to wrap this up. My producer tells me you have only 30 seconds to end the show. Is that tell everybody again where they can forgive me. We'll have to have you on again. Let me just say, you can go to www.neveragainisnowfilm.com. Didn't know I was on a time clock like that. We have to go. Thank you so much for being with us, Evelyn Marcus.
Thank you so much for joining us.
What an honor. We will be back next week on Spouting Off, and there will be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off Tuesday at 11. Join us.